Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about their businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode. Enda McDonagh grew up in Talla, attending St Mary's National School and Temple Owe College. He went on to study BCom in UCD, followed by a Master's in Accounting in the Smurfit Business School. He joined Craig Gardner Price Waterhouse, one half of what became later became PwC, in 1994 via the annual milk round recruitment sweep of universities that the big accounting firms all do. Enda worked as an auditor, making his way up the ranks to manager level, at which point he took advantage of PwC's international transfer system to take a role in Boston in 2000, spending 3 years in the US city. In 2006, he became a partner of the firm, led the assurance practice from 2015, and served 8 years on the leadership team of his predecessor as managing partner, Fergal O'Rourke, before being chosen to lead the firm 2 years ago, taking over from O'Rourke in July 2023 for a four-year term. A second term is possible, but we can talk about that later on. And is married with three teenage kids, who he often jokes is a busier job than his day job. So, Enda, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Aidan. Delighted to be here.
Great. This is going to be a bit of a strange one to start off with, right? But I'm going to ask it anyway. We have a lot of business owners and entrepreneurs have come onto the podcast, right, who all started their careers training as accountants, right? It's incredible that it is, right? You didn't go the route. You stayed as an accountant and not as an entrepreneur. Is there any entrepreneurial blood, or did you just prefer the accountancy side of it?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question to start off with. Actually, funny enough, probably why I became an accountant in the first instance was my mum's family had a family business, a hardware providers in Clonus, County Monaghan. And like most kids coming out of school, you probably really only have an abstract idea of what accountancy really is. But what I had a sense of it being was a pathway to do something in business. And honestly, when I started my career journey, as you called out there in the opening bio, in 1994 in then Craig Gardner Price Waterhouse, you know, for me that was the start of a journey that I didn't honestly know where it was going to go. And I guess you know, if you fast forward 31 years, you're right, I'm still here and didn't deviate it. I think that's because I found the opportunities in the firm, in Craig Gardner and then subsequently PwC, to give me the balance of something that I felt I was good at, but also something that is at its core entrepreneurial. I mean, a partnership in its own right, like a firm like PwC, is an entrepreneurial business, and working your way up through it, the opportunities to work overseas, which we can maybe unpack at some stage, you know, they were all things that just kept me motivated and going. But you never think about it as one continuum. It's always something you're challenging yourself along the way on.
Yeah, and I think you raise a very good point about the partnership model, because I think an awful lot of people who maybe don't necessarily have dealings with the financial services sector and don't realise that they're actually not companies, they're still partnerships in how they're structured, and global in most cases.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, where PwC is we have what we call a Federation of Independent Member Firms. So that means, you know, as a PwC Ireland partner, you're a partner in the Irish firm. Some other firms have different structures. But you're absolutely right. At its core, it means the partnership is a collective of people with the united business interest in growing our own business together, and it's a model I love personally.
The other thing I think that's probably changed dramatically over the years that you've been in, you know, Craig's and then in PwC, is the spectrum of businesses now that are operating under the brand. Like, it would have been traditionally would have been auditors and tax, and that would have been 90% of the business. Now, like, I don't know, what is audit and tax in as a percentage of the business now relative to where it was, and what has replaced it and what has developed on from that?
Yeah, I mean, the foundations, I mean, you're right, Aidan. I mean, the traditional foundations of our firm, and indeed most of the large firms, were in that audit tax space, and that remains ever strong today. It's the core of our DNA. I suppose where we've seen growth and where other firms have seen the growth is probably in the broader advisory space. You know, that for us, that's really kind of two parts. It's the deals business that, you know, is supporting M&A activity locally, globally, which is obviously a huge part of the business market that we both operate in. And then you've got your kind of broader consulting business, which is really about leaning into how you support companies through the challenges of any given day or era that we're in. And in the world we're in now, there's plenty to unpack there. Yeah.
Tell me then, you know, obviously we said it's global things. How does the what's the interaction like between the Irish operation and the global operation and in terms of day to day and even longer term strategy?
Yeah, while we're independent member firms, and the reason we believe in that model is really back to your opening question. It's about leaning into the maximum extent of that entrepreneurship in your local market. But in terms of how we operate global, right? Mm. So it's if you walk into any PwC office in the world, you're pretty much dealing with the same operating model, the same tech, the same look and feel. For our people that work in the organization, our value proposition of what we offer people around the globe is very consistent. Apart from my role in the Irish firm, I'm on the leadership team of EMEA, Europe, Middle East and Africa. And, you know, that's a sort of a regional forum for, you know, ensuring that we're doing things consistently in all the territories in which we operate. And the logic is really kind of simple, Aidan. It's at the end of the day, our business is ultimately all about serving our clients. And if you're a client of PwC's and you're operating on a cross-border basis, you've got to get the same consistent quality experience, look, feel, everywhere. So it's you know, while it is an independent structure for that entrepreneurial reason, it is very much run on a global aligned basis.
Going back to the first question I was saying about the amount of entrepreneurs who've come through that have that accountancy qualification. Why do you think that qualification is so important when they're setting up a business? You think from your own viewpoint, looking in on it?
Yeah, it's a good one. I think as an accountant, when you train to be an accountant in any of the firms, large or small, you learn a lot of fundamental disciplines. You learn the value of sweating the detail, quite frankly, which is really important. You learn how to analyze things, and you know, I suppose recognize between different data sets what looks good, what doesn't look so good. When you're in the professional services part of the world, like I was in training in an audit practice in a firm, you're of course working with dozens and dozens of companies who are your clients, and you get to see a myriad of different business models, a myriad of different real entrepreneurs in action. So you accrete a huge amount, I think, of knowledge and know-how, whether that's around an industry or a sector, say retail or consumer or pharmaceuticals. I think you retain you acquire a know-how around, you know, analyzing the detail behind the numbers, not just the numbers themselves, if I can put it like that. And then of course you're growing up in an environment where you're an integral part of a team, so you have to be able to conduct yourself appropriately within a team environment, how you communicate. And when you can bring all that with you into, you know, I mean, I think what an entrepreneur then obviously has on top of that is they have that innovative mindset, the ability to see the opportunity, and the ability to take risk. And that's, you know, maybe that's sometimes not every accountant.
They have the craziness.
Yeah, so not every accountant is created equal, or perhaps that's why I'm sitting on this sofa as a former audit partner, now a managing partner rather than an entrepreneur. But I think a lot of the sort of latent skills that you acquire serve you very well.
And were you ever tempted to go into industry, go into one of the industries of the, you know, and what industries would have excited you to go in?
Yeah, I was always I always worked with companies in the non-financial services space, if I can use that label. So I worked everything from retail to consumer to pharmaceutical to tech, and I was always very interested in, you know, what I was learning as I was going on. Could I do that for real at a company? So I've always been open-minded, or at least I was in my earlier career, open-minded to making a move. I came very close a couple of times. The reason I probably didn't was fundamentally for me, I love variety. Right. And one of the, you know, this, don't get me wrong, this, being a professional services provider, no different than your own job, Aidan, that there are days that are tough and you wonder what you're doing, right? But for the most part, what I love about my role over the years, and my roles have changed, the one constant has been the variety and the richness of variety that you get by working with different companies mm-hmm. and different industries, different sectors, different management teams. And you pick up huge amounts of insight from that, and you bring a little bit from one to the other. Mm-hmm. I've therefore, as a result, always felt I've always continued to learn something, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think the challenge I've always set myself in life was, if you'd have asked me as my 15-year-old self, I would have loved to be a professional footballer or mm-hmm. something like that, but I was never any good. So you apply yourself to what you're good at. And you know, I suppose when I got into business, I wanted to make sure at every stage along the way I was giving it my best shot and being the best version of what I could be. And that variety and challenge of the professional service environment, as it worked out for me, I was very well suited to that.
Do you get much of an opportunity to do the old day job of audit? Like, when was the last time you actually signed off on a set of audit accounts?
Yeah, if any of my partners are listening, they'll answer that one pretty quickly. And I think I'm now described as an overhead, Aidan.
All right, okay. A cost base.
Yeah. So no, I mean, fundamentally, to be an audit partner, you need to spend the time doing your day job, being an audit partner and spending time with your clients. With the nature of running a firm like of our size, you know, over 3,000 people, the demands of the day to day are such that you really trying to balance the two of those are quite incompatible, really. But that doesn't mean I don't spend a lot of time with clients, but just in a very, very different way.
The one talk we were just talking briefly about, you know, the graduate program when you came in on the old milk round, as it was called. I don't think it's still called the milk round somewhere or other.
But I think it's still knocking around. It's still a label. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
The accountancy firms have always been very, very big employers of the graduates. Where is that, do you think, in the cycle? And I know certainly from my perspective and my industry, all the time now we're talking about, oh, well, all those jobs are going to be replaced by audit or by AI and artificial intelligence. You won't need all of these things. And I'm not quite there and convinced myself. So where as you see it, as the managing partner of PwC, where do you see the importance of graduate recruitment within the overall PwC model?
Yeah, I think for your listeners, the context is really important. I mean, the shape of a professional services firm would often be referred to as a pyramid, which reflects the fact that, you know, we hire significantly from at the graduate level from university. And the nature of our business is such, we've always had a couple of your opening questions, we've always had that experience of people who join PwC, train with the firm, and leave to go on to do other lots of great things. And that's fantastic. And we want that. So you have that sort of attrition rate on the way up. So that such that when you get to the top, it starts to narrow down into the managers, senior managers, directors, and ultimately the partners of the firm. I think we're at a very early stage with AI, right? I say that as somebody, I'm an absolute AI enthusiast. I see the huge possibility that AI creates for business. But our house philosophy in PwC is it's about the human and the technology. That's where you deliver the value. So the role of the human is not going away. And in our business model, that means you're going to continue to need grads. Where I think we're going to see different, Aidan, is if I think of my younger self, and you know, you asked me about the accounting qualification earlier, like you could probably argue I've gone through my career and largely traded my way along, for want of better words, off a fairly singular skill set, being an accountant, being an auditor. And I think in the world that young folks are going to enter into now, my own kids included, when they get to that stage, I think it's going to move much more to a skills-based world, and you're going to have the capability to move across skills in your career. in a way perhaps that I haven't had to do. So when you bring it back to your question, will we continue to recruit graduates? Absolutely, we will. Mm-hmm. It's, in any year, how many we recruit, it always ebbs and flows based on the demands of the business.
But it's a large number. People realise how large a number between the big four that they take in terms of graduates.
We take a very significant number. And there's no doubt we are probably taking fewer just now as we're trying to feel our way through this. But it's still a significant number, right? Yeah. Which I think is an important context. And our business, like a lot of other businesses, will need to figure out over the next 2, 3, 4 years is how do you then put AI tech and technology around our people to make the people experience better and to make our client experience better. Because that's, at the end of the day, our business is no more complicated than that. We are only successful if we have the right talent and if our clients believe we're delivering value. So that's very much where our focus is. Actually, one of the other things I think AI and technology will do over time is I think it'll democratize structures in organizations like PwC, because actually a lot of the younger folk are fantastically more innovative at least than I am, right? So I think their ability to harness AI to move quicker through skills, skills-based learning, I think is something that could be very interesting in the future as to how the shape of business looks. But at least for now, PwC absolutely have a need for graduates. Yeah.
And on that basis then, that kind of pyramid base you're talking about, is the philosophy ultimately much more develop from within than hire from without?
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, there's no doubt we have a heavy homegrown part of our employee base. But our people, what we call our people value proposition in PwC, is grow here, go further. Mm-hmm. And what that's, I suppose, a nod to is that we do recruit a lot of graduates. We serve as a very, very good foundational career experience to start your career in. Of course, we want as many of those bright young people to stay as possible, but it's perfectly fine in our business and indeed advantageous in our business to see them spread their wings and go and do different things. I you look at somebody like me, I'm probably a bad proxy because I joined in 94 and I'm still here, right? But the past history of our firm has always been that people have moved at different stages along the way. I think we'll see more of that going forward. Anything you at least you read or and study about what current young people want in terms of careers, it's probably different to what I wanted. They want that multiversity of experience and doing different things. And actually, I think for a firm like ours, one of the really important things I believe going forward will be people who join us, work with us, maybe go do something else and come back.
Yeah,
and we have quite a bit of that today, I could see that being a feature of the future.
The other thing, and obviously you were a beneficiary of it too, having that global footprint and being able to work abroad within the same organisation is a huge positive.
Fantastic, yeah. It was a huge part of, I would go as far to say I wouldn't be sitting here today without having done it. The opportunity to work in the US or any other country for that matter, but particularly for me in the US, was to use a sporting parlance that the US would use. It's you're kind of playing in the big leagues, right? Yeah. You're working with much bigger companies. Boston has a particular feature to it where it has a very strong financial services market, but in the world that I was operating in, more in the sort of tech, non-FS world, the fusion of having Harvard and MIT, within a couple of miles of each other.
You better mention Boston University as well.
But just picking those two examples, you have BU, you have BC, you have Lowe's, right? But that sort of hotbed of particularly the engineering capability coming out of MIT and the fantastic capability coming out of the other schools as well, it was and is a real fusion for startup, for innovative business activity. So I got to work with different types of companies, much more early stage than I would have done here, with seed capital and basically living day to day, like almost incubator stage, to companies who'd IPO'd and everything in between. And you just learn an awful lot about the pace of that marketplace in the US. I mean, you've worked in that in your life as well, Aidan, you know it well. Different pace, different rhythm. And there's always a sense, I think, even if you're doing the exact same thing that you were doing at home, but you're doing it somewhere else with people who don't know you and you're starting with zero credit in the bank and you can succeed, you kind of prove something to yourself that actually you have something, right? Yeah. And that gives you probably a different level of confidence about your own ability. So, you know, in every which way, it was a fantastic experience. It was brilliant from a business perspective. I think it was very good for a resilience perspective as well. The US, for all the nice things I've said, it's a tough business market. It cuts pretty rough sometimes. You've got to be able to hold your own. You've got to learn, which Irish people sometimes are not always great at, you've got to learn not to take things personally. And, you know, I certainly felt when I came back at the end of that, I had a sort of a, you know, if I did my undergrad and my master's, that was a sort of a finishing school for me in terms of some of the things that set me up for a professional services life, if you put it in those terms. And then, of course, you make great friends, right? Mm. You make phenomenal
network out there.
Of people. The spirit of the Irish community when we're in different places of the world, the way we pull together to look after each other, and indeed other internationalities as well, is just a lovely expat sense of taking sure that creates lifelong friendships, and of course that's great from a personal perspective, but you get some really good business bounces out of that as well. People you get to know go on to do good things, and then you get to work together down the line. So every which way, it was a great experience for me.
The one thing, I suppose, you know, at the end, and your business is no different than my business in terms of the assets walk in and out the door every day.
Right? Yeah.
Right. And it's very different. It's a very different mindset, a very different model to do. So as you sit and as a managing partner, you know, how do you think about managing those assets as they walk in and out the door every day?
Yeah, I mean, we lean in hugely to creating the culture and experience that our people have, and trying to make that the best that it can be, and that and when the leadership team and I that are currently running the firm took charge, two words we put intentionally at the center of our strategy was we wanted our people to feel empowered, and we wanted to feel people to have a sense of belonging. Empowered is that sense I can show up and be the best that I can be, and that the organization will encourage me to be the best that I can be, and I'm belonging being that I can show up who I am. And trying to culture that environment, I mean, I was very, very fortunate. You mentioned it in your opening comments. I spent 8 years working for Fergal O'Rourke, my predecessor. You know, that was a phenomenal learning experience. Fergal was a brilliant leader. But he, you know, one of the things he really imbued in me was that sort of sense of, you know, our culture being really, really important. And as the managing partner, you know, you have a huge role in making sure we mine that culture. Because you look across any segment of business, you could argue lots of companies look same from the outside. I think what makes you different is what you are on the inside, right? And so that's something we work very, very hard on. And, you know, if it was trying to explain that culture in sort of plain English to your listeners, you know, I think we very much focus on high performing teams. It's an environment where, you know, we're trying to create collegiality, that everybody feels that they have a voice. Everybody feels that there's somebody there to help them. Everybody feels there's somebody there to make them better, and you're never on your own. And, you know, look, in a business like ours with over 3,000 people, of course there are things you can always do better, but I feel really proud about the way that we make that culture a lived experience for our people. And you know, as I said, I learned a lot from Fergal in that regard, and I would hope if you had him on the sofa someday, he'd think I'm doing a good job continuing that. Yeah.
And then I suppose the natural question on that, again, and I often wonder about this whole idea of when you have a global company, can you have a single company culture? And it's even stranger in your own because you're like a federation of companies. So is there a PwC culture and then a PwC Ireland culture, or is it, are they aligned, and how is...
Yeah, there is definitely, they're definitely aligned,
right,
to use your words. So, you know, there are things within PwC that are, you know, globally intended to be consistent across the world. So we've the same purpose. Every PwC member firm has the same purpose as a firm. We've the same set of values. We've the same people value proposition. We've the same, I think, intentfulness about what we think our culture is about. But there is, I think at the end of the day, culture always has a degree of localization, right? It, by its nature, it has to, right? Because ultimately, it is a function of the lived experience of the people that you work with. So
particularly when it's a people business.
Exactly. And I travel a lot within the PwC world. So, I see different ends of that. So I think while it's aligned and consistent, there is an Irish piece to that, but in a good way.
Yeah. The other thing I always think that's very, very, it's always interesting when talking to CEOs of people businesses, right? There's always this problem that or it happens quite a bit that, you've hired somebody who's brilliant at what they do, but there's collateral damage from them. Yeah, it's that classic, I always call it, you hire the talented asshole, right? So, when you think about that, it's a really, really, really difficult problem trying to deal with it. And crazy as it all sounds, sometimes you go, the better decision here is get rid of them because, although they may be great, the damage that they're doing and the potential they're ruining because of the collateral damage just doesn't, in the long term, doesn't offset,
Yeah, no, I wouldn't disagree with that at all. I mean, I think we put a lot of our effort into the hiring decision to try and, obviously you're higher up and down the organization at different levels and what you expect increases the more experience clearly that the higher is. But if you just take graduates that we talked about earlier on, I mean, for the most part, we don't care what undergrad you did. We don't care what school you went to, where you come from. What we care is that you have the right skill set, the right attitude, and that you will fit into the culture that we want you to be part of, which is, very much that team-based culture. And it's really interesting the way you frame that, because sometimes we won't be the right fit for somebody.
Yeah.
I'm a big sports nut in my outside of work, and I'm always very interested in the sort of parallels between sport and business. I think there are an awful lot. When you try and look at the construct of high performing teams and talent, you can get the superstar, right? But if they're going to destroy the dressing room, what use is that? And equally for the person who's of a mindset that they want to be constantly reinforced and told that it's all about them, then we're probably not the right team for them either, right? So we put an awful lot into that sort of upfront hiring piece and then all of our kind of coaching and mentoring and development of people that join the firm is very much about helping them find their path to be the best they can be, but in that context of team.
Yeah. The only thing that always strikes me about your businesses, right, and it's not dissimilar to mine in that, although we, I operate in a highly regulated business, it's not that your business isn't regulated, but there's an awful lot of rules, if you know what I mean. So trying to be an innovative company in a regulated or rules-based environment is very difficult.
Yeah, it is. It is. And we are, we are subject to significant regulation, obviously, particularly for our audit practice, and rightly so, by the way, that we should be. But I don't think it's an excuse not to lean into innovation. I think sometimes you can fall into a trap of thinking that rules and regulations are reasons not to do things, where actually, if you can innovate in ways that make things better, you very often might be improving on the quality or the experience that the required regulation or rule that you're trying to meet expects of you, right? So I think I think our philosophy in PwC globally, locally is, it's, as I said earlier on, it's very much human and tech, but it is to lean into innovation and be innovative and, not to,
because ultimately rules change as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And there'd be no misunderstanding, the quality of what we do is sacrosanct. We can't get that wrong. And when we do, it's a problem. But there's an awful lot you can do in the sort of entrepreneurial spirit of a firm like ours to do things differently, smarter, better. And I, you know, go back to something I said to you earlier on. If we're getting this right, we do two things. We deliver value to our clients in a way that they appreciate, and our people, that people experience that we've talked about is where we want it to be.
And when you look at the whole partnership model, do you think there's a difference in how dealing with a board of partners as opposed to a corporate board, right? So yeah, you in that position as you know, if you were CEO in a non-partnership, in a corporation, you go in, you'd have your corporate board. How is it different, do you think? Because you've obviously sat in plenty of board meetings on the corporate side of it. How do you think it's different from when it comes to the partnership model? Because you kind of hope that all the partners would know pretty much most of what's going on day-to-day basis.
Yeah, they do. At the absolute simplistic core of it, your partnership model means your shareholders are in the business with you, right? Yeah. They're there with you every day. I think there's huge strength to that. But it does mean that, you know, like, it's interesting the parallel between being a managing partner in a firm like PwC and being the CEO of a corporate. Mm-hmm. I mean, the CEO of a corporate is a lot more authority to do things independently, but obviously with accountability to the board who serve the shareholders. In a partnership model, because the partners are in the business with you, it is much more of a collaborative effort. Said another way, I'm tremendously fortunate to have loads of people I can call on for help. Mm-hmm. I've got my leadership team around me who are fantastic. But I've also got all my partners there at any given point in time that you can lean on for support or help. And there's that great collective sense of being in something together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like any
and
business.
And do the partners view it as them? They are the owners of the business. That's it's that clearly aligned.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it should be.
Yeah.
It's, you know, the great thing about partnership for me is it's the collective sense of doing something together and achieving something together. So it's a model I really enjoy being part of, and you know, by its nature, it creates you said in your opening remarks about, you know, 2 years into a 4-year term, and we'll see what happens after that. But regardless, there's a constant sense of renewal because you've got the next generation of partners coming up to take the firm forward. Yeah. And the kind of, you know, if you interviewed any partner for, I think, from probably any firm, that sort of core DNA you have is to leave the place better than you found it for the next generation.
Yeah. Who do you seek advice from?
There's probably a bit of a linkage back to your last question. In a partnership, you've got lots of people around you, right, that you can lean on. I mean, from the day-to-day running the firm, I've a 12-person leadership team who, you know, they are my constant go-to day-to-day in terms of running the firm. I have a phenomenal chief of staff who's somebody who God love them, has the sole job of trying to get me through every day and every week. He's just a phenomenal person, a guy called Matt O'Keefe. I've got the most amazing assistant, June Keogh. Actually, an interesting thing about both Matt and June, I kept both them from Fergal. They both had worked for Fergal, and I'm a big believer in philosophically of if things aren't broken, you don't change them. Right? So, yeah. But my God, that's probably the best decision I ever made in my life, because I got that continuity of knowledge and of the office. So you have a disparate set of stakeholders there who are, you know, Matt and June are very much there. They're my day-to-day constant. My leadership team helped me run the firm on a day-to-day basis. You've got all your partners there to support you. And then you've got friends in business that you go for your coffee, your confessional with, right? And it's not necessarily that you unpack. You don't, obviously, in a business like ours, you don't pack anything around the day-to-day of the firm or the confidentiality of that, but you're just reaching out to get that sense of, you know, how are they finding things? You know, what's their sense of the economy? What are they picking up? So it's really, you know, I'm a person who's always tried to seek different views on things just to help me, I suppose, get to my own view of where I think my head needs to be on something. So I'm very, very fortunate. I have a great group of friends professionally and personally,
And I, you know, I'm pretty open person. I actually find no issue at all opening up to people to say, listen, do what you're helping this. Yeah. What do you think? I've yet to find any advice you get that isn't helpful in some way, shape, or form.
And is there much interaction between your peers and the other big four?
We clearly cross each other's paths all over the place. We're in that part of the business season at the moment where there seems to be an event every night of the week, so you constantly bumped into them. Yeah, so you'd see all your peers around town, and you know the way of course we're competitors, but there's huge respect I think amongst all the firms. Certainly, from a PwC perspective, we've huge respect for our competitors. You know, the marketplace is big enough for all of us, I think, to operate, and I think we all learn some things from each other along the way, which is good.
Yeah. What do you think is the hardest part of the job as a managing partner? And secondly, maybe what surprised you in terms as being the hardest part? So looking, you know, before you took the role.
I think the hardest part, and this is probably quite a personal answer as opposed to, you know, something more kind of corporate. I think the hardest part for me personally is you go from, I suppose I spent a career where I spent all of my time working with clients on projects that were very definable, the very defined starts, very defined audits by their nature have to get done. Issues have to get resolved. When you're running a firm, there's a million things it feels like come at you all the time. And sometimes trying to figure out, are you actually making any progress, can be quite difficult actually. And then, you know, as somebody who, you know, is kind of, I probably classify myself as trying to have a high achiever mindset, you know, it's trying to figure out, am I making that progress is something that, you know, you go home on a Friday, some Fridays, some week, at the end of some weeks, you just really do wonder. And, you know, I suppose the thing about the thing, not that it surprised, well, did it surprise me? I guess it probably did, is it's just how much I did, how much I missed that sort of day-to-day experience of being directly client-facing all the time. I found that transition, notwithstanding I'd spent 8 years working with Fergal, so I was very clear, I knew what the role was, but I found the move to be managing partner, giving up my clients, not spending that day-to-day time with my clients, I found that much tougher than I expected it to be. Yeah.
And like, you look at
it's taken every, I would say it's taken every bit of the 2 years to get to a point now where I'm comfortable.
You've made peace with it.
Exactly, yeah. Nobody's having me back.
Yeah. Well, the other thing too, I think, you know, and you're 2 years in the cycle and I'll almost prefer to ask you in another 4 or 5 years down the road, right? But you look at it and you go, because I've talked to a lot of CEOs or managing partners and they always say is, you don't necessarily get better at the job, but you get quicker at making the important decisions. That you know, when you think about your first 6 months, there was probably lots of stuff you go, no, I need to think about this. Now you're going, I need to think about these decisions a lot. I don't need to think about these decisions a lot. Just bang, move, and move on.
Yeah, I think that's very fair. I hope I'm getting that speed to execution that's inherent in your comments. But I think that's right. I think for me, it's a confidence thing, right? When you go around, you know, when you do a year in a role, you start to figure out where everything is the second time around. You feel, you know, what's coming around the corner a bit more. So I think that helps that speed to execution. I think that's right. I'd agree with that.
I suppose when you look back on all of your personal experiences or your developments within the organization, how do you think they've shaped your leadership style as you come to this point now?
I was probably always somebody who, you know, from the very get-go, I always tried to push myself to do more than maybe what I was being asked to do. And I was very fortunate, very, very, very early on in my career to work for a partner who's subsequently retired and sadly has passed away, a partner called Jacqueline McKeown, who effectively became my mentor, right? Mm-hmm. And he had a very nice, Jacqueline had an incredibly nice way of course correcting you, if I can put it in those terms, without you even knowing he was doing it. And getting you to, I suppose, recognize that, you know, I suppose one of the most fundamental things he taught me was the ability to recognize not everybody approaches things the same way as you do, right? So you're, if you're high energy on something and somebody else isn't, that's not going to work. Yeah. You got to find a way to meet people of different dispositions on things in different ways. So I suppose, in leadership speak, I probably, thanks to Declan, learned a lot about how to flex style for different situations. I learned a huge amount from him about the importance of judgment. And Declan was always somebody who played a very long game on things. So, you know where you want to get to. You don't have to win every little battle along the way. You stick with your North Star, where you're trying to go. So, he was a huge influence on my career. And then I think when you know, much like your comment about time and role, you just accrete things over time, I think, don't you? That helps shape your leadership style. And then you get to a certain point when you know, if you're going to run for election to be managing partner firm like PwC, you then got to figure out, well, what does that actually translate to? What are you going to tell other people what that's about? And, you know, I suppose at my core, I believe you can only ever be who you are, right? There are in a firm of our partnership, we've people who are way more talented than me. But I know when I'm confident enough to know now what I think I'm good at.
I heard a very good comment the other week on a podcast. Kenny Dalglish says, you don't carry an equity card. You can't be an actor. You've got to be true to yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I wouldn't want to be associated with Kenny Dalglish quotes, but that probably gives away something else. So the other thing I would say is I've always been a team person. That's always been my core philosophy. I think you're only as good as the people you have around you. And I've tried to bring that hugely into my leadership team. I want us, yes, I'm the managing partner, but in terms of what we're doing in running the firm, it's a team effort. Yeah. And I think for me, that's certainly, it's what makes me able to be myself. And that's, if I can do that, then I'm very comfortable.
Do you hate losing or love winning?
I love winning.
Do you?
Yeah, I love winning. I love winning. Sorry, don't get me wrong. I hate losing too, but I always think losing is about what you learn from it. And winning is enjoyable. It's about celebrating the moment. And again, there's lots of learning and winning, but when you lose.
And are you trying to instill that idea of celebrating your wins within PwC as a managing partner?
Yeah, I know. I don't think I've elevated that. I think we've always tried to recognize, again, within the construct that it's a team effort, we've always tried to recognize that when you win, that it's important that it's called out. And we've I won't bore your listeners with all the details, but we do lots of things from a recognition perspective to recognize that. But I think it's really important you talk out when you lose. You need to understand why.
Yeah.
In a business like ours, in a professional services environment, sometimes when you hear we've lost something, you'd very often be told it's price. Actually, it's rarely ever price.
Yeah.
It might be price and something else.
Yeah.
And it's something else you need to get behind. But no, I love winning.
And is it a very centralized or decentralized management model within the partnership?
I think it probably is elements of both, if that's not an inherent contradiction. So there are, I suppose going back to something I said earlier, the essence of the partnership model, the essence of the member firm model that we have in PwC is to allow people to be entrepreneurial. So you don't want to shackle the partners with too much of command and control. So in that sense, you could argue it's decentralized. But the regulatory aspects of what we have to do, the risk management aspects, our responsibilities to the global brand, mean that there obviously have to be some sort of handbrakes, guardrails, and that. So you're kind of blending both, Aidan and Drew.
How do you make your decisions? Are they data based or gut feel?
No, I'd be very much data driven.
Yeah, you're definitely an accountant.
And then are you fast or slow decision making?
That's a good question. I think on balance, I'm decisive, and I'm not trying to be obtuse about answering your question, but I'm not, you know, I don't necessarily think it's always about the speed of the decision. I think it's about being very clear about what decision you're making, what outcome you're trying to achieve, such that when you
giving
look back
due consideration,
yeah. But I'm decisive. I'm not afraid of making a decision, and that can sometimes be very quick. Sometimes it can take a little bit more time. But I think on things that matter, you need to be very clear in your own mind before you step out on a journey. What is the path you're trying to travel? What's the outcome you're trying to achieve? And I'd be quite disciplined about looking back and going, did we get that right?
Yeah. What personal characteristics do you think are most important as the managing partner?
I think every managing partner in our firm would be different by their nature, right? Because it's you know, if I go back again, something I said earlier, like I can only be myself. But I think the common DNA that you have to have is, first and foremost, you're there to serve the partners, right? So you have to have absolute commitment to partnership and to your firm. You have to have that sense of responsibility to want to drive the place forward strategically and otherwise. I think it's really, really important that you communicate, not just with your partners, by the way, with your people. And in a business like ours, as you say, where assets walk in and out, right? You have to be somebody who's open in communication, and you've got to be prepared to try new things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We're having a dinner party. There's 6 people. There's you, me, and 4 others. Who would you have at the dinner party?
Any sphere at all.
Any
wow.
sphere at all.
Wow. I definitely have Sir Alex there. Definitely showing my colours now. If I could pick anyone in business just now, I'd love to have Sachin Nadella there. Just really intrigued with everything that he's doing. I've saw Barack Obama recently. I'd love to have him there just to get his view on everything that's going on in the world. And why don't we throw Stephen Cluxton in to complete the set?
That's interesting. The one you didn't mention, but you kind of got a bit covered. The top answer in that one is always Roy Keane, just as a
matter. I think by picking Sir Alex, I probably took Roy off the table.
Yeah, you get a bit there, yeah. Well, we've talked about it in terms of this is your first term as managing partner. You can do a second. You'd still be very young even after a second one, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, whether it happens or not, my experience of it is you don't tend to go back into practice from the managing partner perspective. So what do you think, what would interest you as the next layer? Because your predecessor has a very, 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 he's been very busy, probably busier now than he was.
Yeah, no, he certainly is. Yeah. And doing a hugely important role, particularly with what he's doing with IDA Ireland. I probably haven't given it a huge amount of thought at this stage. But I would certainly want to stay active in business, whether that's in a non-executive space, that would be something that would definitely interest me. In the way that PwC works, sometimes there are opportunities to do something more outside of the country, out of charity in PwC, that could potentially be of interest. You know, I'd love to do something, if I could combine something that would get me business and sport, that would be my absolute dream. I don't have any idea what that would look like, but
unfortunately, Rory's office has been taken. Rory's family office has been taken.
Yeah. If I could persuade a mutual friend of ours to have a crack at sorting out Irish football, that would be good fun.
Well, good luck with that one.
Exactly.
I suppose, how do you feel about what you've already done? You're 2 years in now. How do you feel about what you've already... And even, I suppose, again, because as you said yourself, you had 8 years before that. So if you want to take the 10-year journey along, how do you feel about what you've achieved so far within those years in the firm?
I feel I can look myself in the mirror and say I'm 100% giving it my best. I'm very much trying to, you know, like any business leader, you're in a situation that you're in a point in time. I think we're in a particular point in time now where the level of change that's going on around business is at a level I've never seen before. My responsibility as managing partner of the firm is to make sure that we're leaning into that change, that we're pushing ourselves. I mean, for us to be relevant to our clients, we have to do change to ourselves. We have to show that we understand the, you know, things like AI that we talked about earlier. So so I feel pretty good about the fact that I you know, I don't, you know, that I am pushing into that agenda and I'm trying to move the firm forward. But it's, you know, you know yourself, you're only as good as your last day, right? So it's, to me, it's more about what's ahead than what's behind. But I think I'm being intentful and purposeful about where I'm trying to bring the firm.
And how do you deal with setbacks then within that context?
Yeah, I mean, I probably touched on it a little bit earlier. I genuinely believe in life, setbacks are there to be learned from, right? And you have to take the learnings and everything. 100% wouldn't be where I am today if I didn't have that attitude, because, you know, in business, as you know, Aidan, you get loads of them along the way, right? I mean, it's funny when you do interviews with graduates, they'll always say to you, you know, what was that one challenge? And of course, there's never one. There's loads, right?
I've had one in the first hour of every day. I
mean, we could do a separate podcast on that if you want, about the number of mess ups that you make along the way. But to me, it's always about how you pick yourself up, how you learn from them. I try not to. I was going back to a comment I made about something I learned in the US. I definitely learned not to take things as personally as I probably would have done before that. And that has stood me well. Because if you let things get in on you, it just goes nowhere good.
And tell me this now. You don't have to tell me what it actually is, but do you have an idea of what the legacy of Enda McDonagh managing partner period will be for if you will, have you set a goal for yourself, or what, when you've left the role, you kind of go, I wanted that to be my legacy, and that's what it is. And do you think that's important as you go into this role?
No, I do. I mean, I mean,
it can be, I suppose, it can be just the blanding of, oh, well, I want to leave it in a better place than I want. Yeah, so it'd be a definitive thing.
I know that is bland. That might, in some respects, sound bland, but it is fundamentally informs how you, particularly in a partnership structure, how you go about it. But no, yes, absolutely. I feel, without getting into all the ins and outs of it, I feel a huge responsibility to make sure that PwC Ireland and everything that I can influence within that, it stays to the fore of firms in the Irish business market that is trusted, that is seen to have context to help our clients get through the world that we're in now, and is seen as being a place that the young talent in this country wants to come and continue to develop. And I want to keep that going at a time. You're almost a custodian of that when you have the role, but with the level of change going on around business at the moment, it is really complicated. I suppose being very intentful about where I want us to go, how I want us to use technology and the human to drive the firm forward is something I'm very focused on.
And do you think 8 years, if you did two 4 year sessions, do you think 8 years is a long enough period? Or do you think or is it just that it, like, because you're so full on, you can't really physically do it or meant psychologically do it more than 8 years?
I think for a business like ours, it's probably about right. And it's, you know, that's not to say for any of your listeners that I think that 8 years is the limit of how effective people can be in senior business positions. I think it very much depends on the business. The reason I think in our business model it has context is because of the partnership model. We've got this fantastic generation of partners coming up behind who have, you know, different ideas, different energies, and it's only right at some point that you get out of the way and you pass that baton on. So, you know, for good or for ill, the partnership agreements of our firm over time have always put that sort of term at around 8 years, but I think it's about right. It's not something, first of all, I have to get another four, right? And I wouldn't presume anything on that, but But if I was fortunate enough to do so, I think if I had the opportunity to do this role for 8 years, I'd be very, very happy to hand it on to the next.
You'd have accomplished what you'd want to accomplish.
Yeah, and then try and have a go with some of those other things.
Yeah. Right. The black book time. Let's see where we are.
Do I need to be worried about this? Keep your fingers crossed now.
Right. Not surprised the person who asked this question anyway, but here we go. Having travelled your professional journey to date, if you had a magic wand, what would you wish you had done differently and why?
Oh, wow. I would probably, if I was to go back and do it all again, I would have stayed in the US longer.
Would you?
Yeah.
I thought that might be the kind of answer.
Yeah, I probably felt, for context, my dad took ill when I was in the US. So the intention was always for me to go for about 3 years, which in the end was exactly what I did. But around the time when that sort of decision about coming home or staying was a decision, dad got sick and that really took the decision off the table. But I always kind of felt my story was a little bit unfinished over there. And it's not that, you know, in many respects, it's not that it hasn't worked out very well for me, right? Yeah, but there was a couple of things that were mid-flight over there at the time
that you would have liked to see finished.
That I would like to see finished. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And continued my, you know, maybe a little bit more learning over there. But look, it's worked out. It's worked out fine for me. I suppose that response probably indicates I don't have really any regrets about my career path. I've been incredibly fortunate to have had the people I have had around me. I touched on it earlier on, but you know, it's the colleagues and work, it's people like Declan McKeown, learning from somebody like Fergal, all my colleagues along the way who've helped me either side of the pond, and it's your friends out of work as well, you know, and you know, you and I have good mutual friend in common. Like, it's people like him that you know keep you going when you need a lift sometimes, that gets you to where you are. So no, I've been very fortunate that I don't have any one where I'd look back and go, I have a major regret about this, or I'd do that all over again. I'd do something completely different. But I would have loved to probably done a bit longer there. I always actually kind of thought I'd go back to the US at some point, but you know, the way life works
out. Life gets in the way sometimes.
Obviously, once the kids came along, it became a bit more complicated. So.
Yeah. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Enda McDonough. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy, and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.